Yeah, so let me start from motivation. So this is actually partially motivated by this some problem we try to solve in this numerical simulation problem. So you see, we you know, I think during this program, we heard many interesting experiment materials. And as a theorist, what we usually do is we try to build up models and try to do numerical simulation to solve these models. And we know for when you have a strong correlation, both problems are very hard. So I think in certain situation, you can have a pretty good model, but generally, this building model is actually very challenging. And it's partially due to, you know, our capability, limit of our capability to solve these models once the correlation is strong. So this talk is the work we do is partially motivated by this problem. So can we say something sharp here? And of course, there are more like a practical motivations. So we try to search for correlation-driven topological phases in some simple model that could exist in nature, for example, Hubbard or TJ model. And this one is even more, at least sounds more realistic. So what would happen if graphene can be doped to 1/4? I think this is probably quite challenging, and there's some progress in the experiments. So let me mention about this honeycomb lattice, but with a 1/4 doping. So this is actually an interesting problem. So we know in graphene, at half filling, you have this dark cone at the zone corner. But if you dope it, so let's assume some simple tidy bonding model with no further neighbor hopping. Then at a 1/4 doping, no matter your hole dope it or electron dope it, you will get this honeycomb shape of Fermi surface. And this Fermi surface is interesting because there are obvious features. You have this nested wave vector. In fact, you have three nested wave vectors. And you also have this, at end point, you have a Van't Hoff singularity. So that means correlation certainly do something. Even you have very weak interaction, this Fermi surface will be unstable. Something will happen. For the real, so let's imagine graphene as some potential realization of this model or this system. You happen to have some intermediate strength of correlation. I think U over T has been estimated to, say, 2 or 3. I don't think these are very accurate estimates, but.
So that nesting is when you take only the nearest neighbor hopping?
Yeah, for nearest neighbor hopping, it's perfectly nested. But the further neighbor is not perfectly nested.
Yeah, another U is just the
on-site Hubbard. Yeah. Let's think about Hubbard. The on-site U is the, maybe the one of the leading terms. So the question is, what will happen if you put in a correlation? So in fact, previously there were several works. So in fact, there are many proposals that, about what could happen. So there are some popular ones. So actually, for this talk, I will mention two. So one of them is the so-called chiral spin entry wave. So the idea is let's look at this Fermi surface. You have a nested wave vector, and we know there's a spin density wave instability. So some order could happen. I think I know the trick now. Yeah. So then if you do some mean field study, then you'll find there's a particular a favorable ordering pattern, which is called this chiral spin entry wave. So the ordering pattern have this nice real space feature. So so basically the unit cell become 4 times bigger, and this different color representing the ordering moment in different direction in the spin space, and this different direction form a nice tetrahedral. Right. So so that's the real space pattern of this Cairo SDW. This is one of the proposed state, and this happens actually because you simultaneously generate a magnetic order at all the Q vectors. And there's another proposal. So this proposal, I think, originally was, I think it's mainly based on this Van Hoff singularity, where you have a lot of density of state. And if you look at the RG flow, I think which is done by this paper, then you realize there's a particular favored state, which turned out to be a superconductor. And this superconductor breaks temporal symmetry. So what I'm plotting is this a pairing on the bond on the honeycomb lattice in the real space. And a different color representing different pairing phase. So if you rotate 60 degrees, you pick up this phase. And so that's why people call it D plus ID, because the phase you pick up matches the symmetry of D plus ID. Okay, so it turned out that these two phases are both very interesting because they are both are correlation-driven topological phase. So it turned out that this chiral spin density wave has this quantum anomalous Hall effect. So basically, this magnetic order texture, it gives you some battery phase if the electron move around, and it plays some role as some spontaneously generated spin order coupling. And then consequently, you have this this chiral edge mode. So this is I think one can call it a Chen insulator. So it's really due to this magnetic order pattern. And this state turned out to feature this so-called spin quantum Hall effect. So this was originally proposed by Santo, I think. So essentially, the charge is not conserved, but because spin is conserved, you can define some response in the spin sector, and you can show there is this state has this also have this edge mode carrying spin degree of freedom. Yeah. So those are the two proposals. Okay. I think this is a very interesting problem. So then, this motivates us to look into this two model and to see. What happens, what really happens. And the limitation of a previous study is they're certain, like either mean field type or they're like RG type. So we try to do something maybe particularly suitable for intermediate to strong coupling strength. So we look at both this TJ model and the Hubbard model. Hyperbolic people, I think everybody know. I think TJ model should also be familiar. I think this is a one of the important model for cuprates. Yeah. So let me present the result and then I can relax. So the result is this. So we use a combination of many methods. But at the end of the day, there's a phase diagram. So in the Hubbard model, we find the ground state from, say, U over T around 1 to, say, 20. We always find this either is a chiral spin density wave or this so-called ICCL. So I will mention this guy later. So this is some phase we proposed. There's some new phase we proposed here. And in the TJ model, in this small J regime, which is sort of adiabatically connected to this large U regime over here, we find the same thing. But when J is larger, we find this D plus ID. And there's a first order phase transition here. So we think we got some pretty reliable understanding about the phase diagram. So we can distinguish this candidate phase in a sharp way. So first thing I want to mention is this mysterious phase we write down here. So we call it the spin charge Chen liquid. So what is this phase? So this is some new phase we propose. So it's a topological orders phase. It features some anions, like a charge 1/2, statistical angle pi over 4 anion in this phase. So the easiest way to visualize this phase is you start from this chiral spin negative wave, and then you imagine quantum fluctuation is very strong to melt the Langrange order. So after the Langrange order is melted, spin order is melted, the resulting phase you get is this SCCL, spin charge chain liquid. And we do some finite size numerical study. So because it's pretty, it's not a very big size, so we couldn't really tell the difference between this this state and this phase and this phase, because they're only different by the fact that one have Langrange order, one in the other the Langrange magnetic order is melted, quantum melted. So that's why we always put two together. So we don't tell the difference because we couldn't tell. But nevertheless, there's a pretty sharp experimental signature to tell them apart in experiment. So one thing we do is we compute the low temperature tunneling conductance. So the so if you are in this say chiral spin negative wave state, which have this usual chiral edge mode, so the current the low temperature tunneling conductance will go to a constant. So assuming you have some point contact with a weaker tunneling, so that's the conductance you get at low temperature. But in the other state, it turned out that this tunneling conductance depends on temperature with a power law, with the power being 4, so this is the universal power law. So that's the main result.
Right.
Yeah,
this is my input. So total pi over 4, is that the exchange
statistical
angle, or is the full
gradient
circle statistical
angle?
I think this is a
self
statistics.
Just exchange.
Yeah.
And do you get edge modes in the,
yes,
in the disordered phase?
Yeah. Yes, there are edge modes. That's where this comes from. This
T to the 4.
Come from.
Edge modes,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So. So what we learned from these results, I think the first thing is about some common graphene. I think it's probably not a D plus ID superconductor, because I think graphene probably live here, at least to the leading order in this parameter space. It probably live here. It's supposed to be one of these two. And the D plus ID realized in some larger J regime. So, and then we propose this new state, and it has a characteristic transport signature. I think another thing I learned from this result, I think the most important thing I learned from this result is there is a very simple realistic model that gives you correlation-driven topological phases almost everywhere. It's basically, yeah, go ahead.
So all these phases are basically have gaps, bulk gaps.
Yes.
I guess since you're a neutral superconductor, the model, there's a sound mode or something, but they're basically mostly gapped phases.
Mm-hmm.
So are you also consider in these various methods the possibility of just a metal, a correlated metal, much more gapless?
So for this particular study I talk about, we don't we do this DMRG kind of study. I think if you in 2D and you have some metal, you will have a hard time. I believe so. Doing DMRG. Is this your question?
I'm just curious whether it's somehow. You'll tell us, I guess, more.
Yeah, I will tell you more about this. And at the end of our talk,
it's kind of weak coupling nesting arguments, or what's suggesting not to have a metal, but strong coupling, it's not so obvious, and it usually becomes less metallic. But on the other hand, a priori.
Yeah, so maybe the honest answer is the reason why we can obtain a sort of good understanding of the phase diagram is we choose a simpler problem. I think if a correlated matter is a much more complicated problem. Yeah. This, maybe.
So, if I go back to recoupling arguments, then I'm addressing even further, like when J is even smaller or U is even smaller. Right?
Oh, J even smaller.
Right, that's a recoupling, all the calculations.
You're talking about TJ model or Hubbard model?
That's the Hubbard model.
Yeah, so the TJ model, these are some infinite U limits, so that's
a
strongly
coupled.
So over here, because we only do small, it's pretty small, like 32 size sample,
right,
which is already very challenging numerically. So we couldn't really say something sharp over here. So the reason is it's a weak coupling regime, your correlation line is supposed to be very long.
But suppose I trust the functional RG or something like that in weak coupling. And then suppose, I believe, they don't find SCCL, they find
So if
one believes that, then there's a transition between...
Yeah, that's what I believe. Yeah.
Is there some signature of that transition? Like, those transitions maybe have some...
For the 32-size sample, which we study, the larger sample we study, we don't find any D-pass ID over here. So for that particular sample, we are sure it should be represented by this state. But you know, if you go to larger sample, story can change for the weak coupling.
Can you go to a strong coupling limit and do some kind of degenerate polarization thing? So if you go to large U limit, presumably you have a lot of degenerate charge configurations, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the large U limit, and starting from that degenerate manifold, can you do a degenerate polarization thing to derive some?
Yeah, that's probably very difficult.
It's just TJ?
You probably even talk about some infinite U, like a J equals zero limit.
I'm wondering whether you generate like some...
That's actually also very difficult to solve, I believe.
But at least you could derive some ring exchange type model.
It's the TJ model with J equals zero is the degenerate perturbation theory. It has a non-zero answer at first order. Just project into the manifold.
But that's what you'll.
It's the next order.
But the next order becomes very difficult.
It's already, it's a well defined problem. J equals infinity, J equals zero, TJ model is a well defined problem.
One of the hard problems, I think.
Then probably it's a matter.
Oh, it's not obvious.
It's not obvious. It's pretty large filling.
This is commensurate with passing point.
So your J is 40 square over U, I believe, right?
No. The TJ model is a different model. But if you in this small J regime, you can imagine this J is coming from this T over U expansion.
Yeah, but if I use in U or T expansion, T over U expansion. So the J is 40 square over U from mapping from Hubbard TJ. So and this critical point 0.8 is roughly then U over T is equal 5.
That, I think in that regime, this expansion already doesn't work well. I think this expansion works really well only when U over J is really large. So,
how long?
So something 20 or something. So or maybe 15. So that's my understanding. I think otherwise you have a lot of other terms that are missed in this simple model. Okay. More questions? We can continue. So very good. I represent the result, so I can relax. You know, I still have a lot of time, so let me try to go to some details, and I think you know these details are become more like theoretical. So, but I think KTP probably allow this. So let me explain how we got this phase diagram. We say okay, we have some quite a reliable way to to do this quite challenging numerical simulation to correlate the model. So, but exactly what we do. And I also plan to mention some details of this new phase. So how do we obtain the phase diagram? So historically, we know writing down quantum wave function actually are very useful. So what we really do is this. We really do is, okay, we have some guess of what this ground state could be. So there are some candidate phases. So let's just write down the wave function of these phases. And I will tell you why in this practice, in this simulation, why writing down wave function, analytically writing down wave function, why that's important. So what we exactly do is we choose some sample. So this is honeycomb like this. So this is some 8-size sample. This is some 32-size sample, which is like 4 by 4 by 2, because each unit cell contains 2 sides. And we also do similar thing on this 24-size sample. And we always use periodic boundary condition, and all the samples are sort of symmetric samples. And we constructed this symmetric state using some slip particle methods. But the question is, this is actually quite there are some non-trivial techniques involved, but it's really some technical methods to construct a wave function. But it's not the usual way to construct the wave function for these states. The usual way is you write down some Minkowski field state. And the reason why we choose this highly technical methods to construct wave function is that it's actually very useful for us. Because if you think about, you know, you do some numerical simulation on some finite size lattice, you realize in most cases, the symmetry breaking which you have in mind in these symmetry breaking phases will be restored. So there's no symmetry breaking. So the wave function is all symmetric. So what this slip particle method really allow us is it can allow us to construct some fully symmetric wave function on this sample, on this finite size sample. The usual way you write down wave function is break the symmetry by hand. But this way you construct some fully symmetric state. For example, you take this chiral spin density wave which breaks spin rotation symmetry. If you use this way to construct wave function, you'll get a spin singulate wave function on these samples. So it's automatically symmetric. So then we have these wave functions. Then what we do is we look at the quantum number of these candidate phases on some finite size samples. So for example, let me look at this D plus ID, and I look at this 4n by 2 lattice. So then we can analytically compute the quantum number of this wave function. And we find that, for example, the lattice quantum number, this lattice momentum quantum number being at the gamma point. And if you do a 60 degree rotation on this sample, you find the wave function actually have a twofold degeneracy, because there's a one wave function whose angular momentum is 2π/3, the other one is -2π/3. And the mirror symmetry and Hammersdorff send one wave function to the other wave function. So this tells us, for example, if I construct this state on this finite size sample, I got twofold degeneracy. And this twofold degenerate state, they form some particularly irrep of the symmetry group on this sample. And if you do the same thing for the for either the chiral spin density wave state or the this SCCL state, you find another twofold irrep. So this is something that you don't always expect to happen, because even if you break some symmetry, you put on a finite size lattice, you usually get one ground state. But in this case, the symmetry actually protects a twofold irrep. Yes.
So for the D plus ID superconductor, the two states, you're talking about just D plus ID and D minus ID?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. There's a time reversal related, yeah, exactly. And And then for this sample, you this sequence of sample, 4n by 4n by 2, like 4n by 4n by 2, you find that the quantum number are really different. These two guys form one particular EREP. This deep plus ID form another EREP. The quantum number completely different. But on the 4n by 2, plus 2 by 4n plus 2 sample, then if you do the similar analytical computing the quantum number, you find everybody have the same quantum number. They also form twofold EREP, but then this quantum number between this guy and this deep plus ID become the same. Okay, so then, you know, we know, so that's why, you know, the numerical calculation we do is somewhat unconventional, because usually, if you try to distinguish some magnetic states and some superconducting state in numerics, what do you do? You usually just measure correlation, correlation function, correlator. You know, if you do numerical simulation on some hybrid model, TJ model, you couldn't go to very large system size. And if you try to determine phase by correlator, it's not very sharp. But this way, we know if we do numerical simulation on, for example, on this sequence of sample, I'm supposed to have a sharp sharp difference between these candidate phases, because they really have a different quantum number. So then we, because we know this quantum number information, we really just, this motivates us to really do a simulation on this kind of sample. So our choice of sample is actually due to our understanding of these quantum numbers. So for example, you can choose n equal 1, so that's the smallest sample you can imagine. And so that gives you 32 sites. And that's already very challenging. If you try to simulate some 32-site sample with Harvard or TJ model. So this slide is some technical detail. So it tries to explain how we analytically construct a wave function. So I think the deep plus ID is simpler, so let me don't mention that. But for these two states, Kairos spinetic wave states, exactly how we construct a symmetric wave function. So the main idea is using this slave particle method. The spin is carried by some boson, and the fermion carry charge, and the wave function obtained after you glue this boson and fermion. So the boson actually forms some superconductor. It has both hopping and pairing, and the fermion fills some band. And the boson part of wave function is some permanent, and the fermion part of the wave function is some determinant. So the wave function is really a product of permanent determinant. So this complicated pattern is to plot the bosonic part of this wave function. So this complicated pattern is just to make sure that the wave function you construct indeed have a full lattice symmetry. At the same time, after you condense this boson, because boson carries spin. After condense the boson, you have some long range order. And after condense boson, this pattern makes sure that you obtain this right tetrahedral magnetic order. So that's some technical details. So the main field picture is very simple. So to capture these two phases, you have some fermion bands. Because fermion, you dope the system by 1/4, so there's some fermion, like a carrier charge. We call it fermion holon. So actually, this fermion will fill a Chern band. And the boson part forms some band structure. And the question is whether the boson condense or not condense. So that basically is the same question as whether the boson band touch zero or not. So if it touches zero, that means it condense. And then it will give you this long range order, which is a Kairos spinetic wave. But if it's not touching zero, then you have this so-called liquid state. It's a skin traction liquid. Whether the boson band minimum touches zero or not, this is on finite size system, it will never touch zero. There's some finite size effect. So that's why we couldn't, you know, physically it's very reasonable. You couldn't tell the difference between the two on a given finite size sample. So that's why we don't tell the difference.
Don't you have any distinction in the excitation spectrum?
Other than a disorder state?
STW and
STCM. Oh, yes, yes. One is gapped. So this liquid state is gapped in the bulk. And this guy have a ghost mode in the bulk. So that's different.
But are you saying that that is not distinguishable in finite size
characteristics? Yeah, finite size.
Do you have any qualitative difference in the excitation?
But there are also a finite size gap always there. So.
Won't there be like Anderson Tower?
That's a good question. You know, so in fact, we couldn't obtain the outer spectrum. So because we do some DMRG. So this is already too big for us to do utilization.
Why is it too big for you?
Yeah, maybe some expert like Frederick can do this, but it's certainly too big to me. Because you have a much bigger Hilbert space, basically. Is usually you go to such a system size, spin 1/2 is fine, but if you have a 3 states per size, that's very difficult. So we couldn't obtain all the spectrum. So if we have obtained all the spectrum, maybe this Anderson Tower is something to look into.
But won't it show up in the entanglement spectrum?
Okay, good question. Yeah, so I will mention this later. Yeah, so the DMRG actually, so the bottom line is we didn't look into it. Yeah. So maybe that's a short answer. Yeah. So because you know you have, what I'm not sure is, even when you talk about Anderson Tower. It's actually a statement of finite size scaling. So you can well define Anderson Tower after you scale the system size a little bit. Here, I think even one step further, you know, to a bigger system size will be much, very, very challenging. So that's why we don't look into it. Yeah, so we actually perform this DMRG simulation. And that's why we obtain this phase boundary. Over here in the blue region, all the quantum number matches this these two guys, and the red region, the quantum number matches D plus ID. So there's a sharp difference over here. But of course, quantum number shouldn't be the end of story because you know you certainly could have other phases which may share the similar quantum number. But the fact that we find that say twofold degenerate states. With this exactly the same twofold rep you expect in this candidate phases, there's some evidence that this picture is correct. Of course, I will present you more evidence. The question is, can there be other phases? Because quantum number shouldn't tell you everything. So one thing we do is we check whether this D plus ID over here is correct or not. So we do some various Monte Carlo for this D plus ID superconducting wave function. And this wave function has one a single tunable parameter. And we do this optimization of that single parameter. So then we realize, you know, so this plot is I'm tuning J over T in the TJ model. And what I'm plotting here is the energy from this variational wave function divided by the energy of the DMRG wave function. So this is supposed to be very close to almost exactly the same as the energy of the true ground state wave function. And this ratio should be always less than one. So over here in this regime, this dependent on the sample, this single parameter wave function do a very good job. It captures certainly more than 95% of the ground state energy. And on this sample, it's actually doing even better. But for small J regime, you can see the energetically is not very good. So that's this plot is to show you that so at least if comparing with the variational Monte Carlo, this side is pass a check. And we also measure all the correlation functions. So for example, we pick some point in this red region, and we also pick some point in the but both plot here is we pick points in the blue region. So this is in the blue region, and also this is in the blue region. So what I'm plotting here is the spin-spin correlation function. So what we do is we fix one spin at this green dot, and we move the other spin around the lattice. And I'm plotting the correlation function as a disk. And the radius of the disk is proportional to the magnitude of the correlation function. And the color of the disk is depend on the sign of the correlation function. So then you see this very peculiar feature of this like ferro, and this blue means ferro, and the red means anti-ferro. So you have a ferro correlation and anti-ferro correlation on neighboring guys. So the ferro correlation always follow this diagonal direction across the honeycomb. So this is exactly what you expect in this chiral spinality wave pattern, because if you look at this, you really have, for example, you start from this blue. The next blue is a diagonal. And the other guys are like pointing in the other three directions in the tetrahedral. So the other guys will be antiferro. Correlation function will be negative. And in fact, you can, if you really have this particular like a classical picture of this order, you expect the correlation function along the ferro direction is basically three times bigger as the anti-ferro correlation for the other sides. So if you plot this ferro correlation function and the anti-ferro correlation, you take a ratio. This ratio is indeed around like 1/3. So this is consistent with this pattern. So that means this particular tetrahedral pattern, of course, explain all this data completely. So that's the main message. So we have pretty good understanding about this blue region. We think it's it has this at least short range tetrahedral magnetic correlation. And if you measure the pair correlation function, you can compare this blue region and the red region. The blue region, you find that the correlation function is very small, and the red region, the correlation is very large. So here, again, I'm plotting the bound and the bound correlation function using this disk. So I fix one bound here, and I pick the other bound here, and the size of this disk represents the magnitude of the correlation function, and the color of the disk representing the phase of the correlation function. So if you have a D plus ID, you expect, you start from this bound, this will be red, according to this phase coloring we use. So this will be red, and this will be green, and this will be blue. And that's exactly what we see over here. But on the other side, it's not like that. The phase is not like that, and the correlation function is much weaker. So that's how we convince ourselves this phase diagram, indeed, we got the right phases. So that's the bottom line. We use a lot of methods, and at the end of the day, we have this strong evidence that's supporting this phase diagram. And finally, let me mention some details about this new phase. So this can be viewed as some resulting phase. This liquid phase can be viewed as some resulting phase after the long-range order in the spinality wave is melted. So it's fully gapped in the bulk. So similar magnetic order states being after the order is melted, this has been discussed a lot in the undoped system. So it's a quantum spin liquids, and many people in the audience are experts on quantum spin liquids. So comparing quantum spin liquids and this spin charge Chen liquids, so certainly this state is much more it's sort of non-trivial to realize, because the first thing we have to do is to dope the system to 1/4. And that's experimentally, I think, it's quite difficult. But maybe there's some smart material way to realize it. But the untoped system is much easier to find. But on the other hand, this liquid phase in the doped system turned out to be easier to be stabilized. So there's some very simple Binfield argument. If you dope the system, the doping effectively just reduces spin even further. So at least on the Binfield picture. So the spin become even sort of less than 1/2. So that actually helped the quantum fluctuation. So there's a Binfield picture tells you that it's actually easier to stabilize this liquid state in a doped system compared to undoped system. So that's the first comment. A second comment is this may be easier to be detected because we know in quantum spin liquids physics, there's a lot of challenge to detect it in experiment. But this guy, I will mention, have a very characteristic transport signature, which is tunnel conductance. Okay. So this intuitive understanding, you can already see what happens because in the bulk, in fact, this liquid state hosts certain anion, so it's carried charge 1/2, and statistical angle is power of 4. So this guy, you can visualize it as a consequence, the counterpart of this Z2 vortex in this characteristic wave. You know, in this characteristic wave, it's non-coplanar, so you have the order is non-coplanar, so you have this Z2 vortex in this state. And this Z2 vortex basically carries some pi barrier phase, and this state is also a chain insulator. You have a pi barrier phase on top of a chain insulator, it probably give you a charge 1/2, and that exactly happens in this liquid state, where this vortex become deconfined quasi-particles. So that's the intuitive way to understand it. And on the boundary, because the spin order is melted, the original carrier edge mode become a different kind of carrier edge mode. This edge mode still carry charge 1, but it doesn't carry spin anymore. So that's the picture for the edge mode in this liquid state. That's sort of continue on that question. So there are edge mode in this liquid state, and it carries a charge but not spin. So that's actually why you got this tunneling conductance. So in this state, in the bulk, the electromagnetic response is still the same as the usual chain insulator. You will have this usual Hall effect. But on the boundary, it's actually insulating for electrons because this particle only carry charge on the spin. And if you put a point contact with some metal, what tunnels in cannot be the electron, but you can still tunnel some pair of electrons. So pair of electrons can be spin neutral, carry charge. So that can go into. So that's where this T to the fourth power comes from. So of course there's some calculation you can do. It's basically some simple scaling dimension analysis that convince you for this edge mode, you do have this T to the fourth power tunneling conductance. So let me skip this slide. This state can be so it has some unusual topological order. I don't think it's a usual. It's maybe better not even to talk about in terms of Z2 topological order. But there's some unusual topological order appear in this liquid states, and there's a field theory description of this topological order, which is captured by this so-called multi-component transaminant theory developed by Wen. So in this theory, so there's an effective theory describing this liquid in which every physics will be captured. So using this effective theory. So that's the effective theory. So that's a summary. So we do some very practical simulation on some simple realistic model. And I think the main important message is this model is simple, and at the same time, it realized correlation-driven topological phases almost everywhere. And so it's relevant, of course, for certain materials, but probably very difficult to dope at this moment. We also propose this new phase, and we talk about some, we discuss its experiment signature. Okay. So finally, I don't have time. Yeah. Okay, so maybe Yeah, so, okay, so, yeah, maybe there's something I want to mention. So this is really motivated by this numerical study. And so basically so let me go to this this picture. So we have a new work which basically motivated by this numerical method we use. We try to develop some systematical way to sharply tell the difference between quantum phases based using short range physics. And this this method is based on this tensor network method. So for those who are interested, I would like to talk about this in private. But essentially is a generalization of the method we use, using some different way to construct a function. Yeah, so this method have the potential to solve the generic problem in which candidate phase can be distinguished by short range physics. Yeah, so let me stop here.
So how stable are these phases to doping away from one quarter field?
Yeah, good question. I don't have numerical result report. Yeah, so of course, you know, if you dope it away a little bit, this will be a stable phase, right? Because all you do is you create some excitation, the charge excitation, which probably localized by some impurity. But if you dope away further, of course, my guess is you probably get some superconductor. So that's you know, if you try to ask more energetic question, exactly where the phase transition happened, I don't have a numerical result. And it's actually a very difficult problem, I think.
A related question: if you dump away, and say it will be not fully gapped.
Okay, so assuming your dopant is not localized by some impurity, they will form some pocket. So like a Fermi surface.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, that's true.
So how stable are your phases to including nearest neighbor repulsion, which would drive it into some charge density state,
So that's not obvious to me. So at least because if you look at the picture, the neighboring the further neighbor is also anti-ferro, so at least you know.
No, but I mean, you're only talking about the spin sector so far. If you include nearest neighbor charge repulsion.
Oh, charge repulsion. Sorry. I thought you were talking about second.
So then I wonder how much of this still survives.
Yeah, so that's a good question. So charge repulsion. Yeah, so yeah, it's not obvious to me what will happen. Yeah,
but that's the problem. Feeling with the V and I and J, I'm not sure how you can get P. I mean, to commensurate, so
yeah,
there is a possibility that it can form a charge density wave with some recursive N I and J type.
Yes. So
that's the argument you started with. It will give you a charge density, but that.
Yeah, the question is when does the charge density wave happen? Yeah, so that I don't know.
Did it change your spin of the structure?
There are probably different. Second neighbor repulsion may help.
Yeah, sure. Right, then it will change again because it frustrates the charge density wave pattern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're saying the charge excitation maybe. There are some states pulling down from the gap, and maybe something will happen. Is that the picture?
I have a question about finite temperature. So you have the magnetic order phase and the spin liquid state obtained by disordering the long range order. Now, at a finite temperature, the magnetic order is not going to be present anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So then, are the finite temperature version of the two different bound states the same phase or different phase?
Sorry, which two phases? The liquid and the order states, right?
Yeah, the magnetic order state and the
yeah, I think they are the same at the finite temperature. Yeah.
I have a simple, you know, I mean, what's the significance of your T, the nesting? Because I really don't get it in this strong coupling. Do you really need a nesting here?
You don't. If the correlation is strong, you don't.
Yeah. So yeah. If I add a T prime, it's not going to change your conclusion, or am I going to missing the metallic state or something?
There's going to be a metallic state in there at some point.
Yeah, at some point, yeah. So
but
the question is, what point?
Below the U over T that you haven't shown, maybe? It's possible that the...
This small U over T you can understand very well by the weak coupling, like a nesting picture.
If I add a T prime, you probably miss
you get some metal.
Possibilities.
Yeah, you get the metal, of course.
Might not show up.
Yeah.
Is the DM regimen miss the metal anyway? It doesn't really like metals.
Yeah, so there's some bias there as well. So
that's probably the most basic question. Is the thing metallic anywhere?
Yeah.
Studying one fixed size, I mean, even the metal, the various gasless states might have the same EUREP.
Yeah, so I think we'll have to look into the how gaps scale. Yeah, but this is something we haven't done, I think. At the same time, intuitively, of course, if you get an order, you increase correlation, you get stronger order, which always maintain a gap, so that's the intuitive understanding. But I think generally this is sort of not true.
Can I ask
you
just a different question? So, I mean, you're comparing on some fixed finite clusters where, I guess, there isn't a sharp distinction between phases, really. I guess, so one could maintain the shape of the cluster and make it larger and larger, and then ask, in principle, you know, what is the, in what EUREP does the ground state lie, given the assumption of a particular phase, like the D plus ID or the CSW.
Right.
And it sounds like the construction you made was for a particular wave function representative of the phase. But so is it obvious that every representative of the phase, when combined to, when confined to a large but finite cluster, lies in the same EUREP?
I think so.
For example, you put
so
some...
It depends on the state. If the state, say, don't have some... if you don't break, say, translation symmetry, if you, for example, if you stay the living spin zero sector.
And your SDW does.
Sorry, so I shouldn't. So, but on a finite size lattice, doesn't break translation symmetry in that way. Sorry, it's more complicated than that. It's a. So it's really related to whether your symmetry breaking state are supposed to have a lot of degenerate sector on a finite size lattice. So by degenerate, I don't mean I mean valence bound crystal type of degeneracy. So those kind of degeneracy is more subtle. Exactly what is the true ground state, that's more subtle. But for this, for example, for this spin order state, we have a very good understanding of what should be the ground state, because other states are like a spin wave excited. So I don't think there's a uncertainty. So there, I think the ground state have to be in a certain sector. Also here in the ground state, you have some, you could have some like a sound mode excitation, but apart from that, there's no other complicated degeneracy. So here, the quantum number is also pretty sure. That's a big
question.
Did you apply your tensor network algorithm to this particular problem?
No, we are benchmarking on some much simpler problem. Yeah, because it's new methods. But the main idea, so this, thank you for asking me this question. So let me go to my advertisement. So you can see, okay, you know, the main challenge for numerical simulations is indeed, you know, this is a challenge everybody face, right? So in most cases we do Bayesian wave function. We try to optimize some energy, which is a local property. But the quantum phases, they need long range physics to tell. But do we always need a very large system size to tell? But the answer is no. What I showed you is there are these candidate phases have a distinct quantum number even on finite size sample. Like trivial example, like ferromagnet, antiferromagnet. If you put on finite size sample, this guy give you a large spin. This guy give you a spin zero sector. The quantum number is completely different. So over here, they're all different. So then the distinction must in some short range physics and telling apart this kind of difference should be much easier. So this motivates the following picture. So maybe there exist a certain crude classes, and between crude classes, the distinction lies in short range physics, meaning how the symmetry is implemented in the local patch of wave function become different. But within one crude class, there may be more than one phases. The difference between them is the long-range correlator. So this method we introduced is to understand. So first, how do I systematically understand all these classes? And second, how do I write down generic trial wave function for each class? So in the problem we studied in this talk, we are lucky because we have a good guess of what could happen. But we know what are the candidate states and so on. But the answer to this general question would solve the general problem. What if I don't know this candidate phase, right? So I still can do this general construction. So that's what this work is about.
To distinguish the CSDW and the CCL?
That's a long-range difference. So that's in one class.
Still need larger.
That doesn't need the challenge for the long run phase is always there.
The advantage of tensor network is probably you can do much larger systems.
That's not how I look at the advantage of tensor network. Frankly speaking, I think capturing the correct long run physics in tensor network probably very difficult. So the advantage I view tensor network is that it allows you to look at the whole wave function by piece by piece, local piece by local piece. So you can diagnose the whole wave function by looking at something local. So that's the advantage of tensor network. So that's exactly the right language to address this kind of question. Because here we really try to understand how wave function behave under symmetry locally. So this language allow you to look at the local patch of a wave function. So that's what kind of network is useful here.
Okay, so let's send in again.